I didn't want to fail. There is no choice there. Either you dig in and you succeed, right, or you, you know, get scared and you pull back and you fail.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I am in Dublin, Ireland. It is so exciting to be here. We were here for Dublin Tech Summit, just concluded, and we had the opportunity of hearing an amazing speaker, one of the best tech companies in the world, Slack. Hello, Allie.
Hello. Thanks for coming out today.
Yeah, I appreciate you allowing me to be here. This is amazing. I'm in the Slack headquarters in Dublin, and it is so exciting. So, Allie, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Slack for those of you that don't know, which is, I'm sure, very few.
My name is Allie Rail. I'm the global head of customer experience at Slack. And at Slack, we are making a messaging platform for teams. So people trying to get work done together, a way to communicate and share information.
Amazing. And so, I mean, this is huge. When did you start your journey into the tech world? How old were you?
I was really, really young. So my dad worked for the phone company, and he actually worked on one of the sort of, at the time, you know, one of the teams that had computers, which was pretty cool. He would bring home VT100 terminals, and he taught me how to write my class papers when I was in elementary school in VI and print them out on a dot matrix printer. And then as he changed roles within the phone company, he would bring home different computers and modems. Right. So I grew up with a variety of Apple computers in the house and lots of modems. And somehow I found the number for a BBS, in a newspaper once. And I figured out how to use the modem and I called it. And that was really my first exposure to interacting with people online, was a 2400 baud modem on an old Apple.
I always wondered if there's so many stories that women have about their parents bringing home something, and that's how they got introduced to the world of tech. And I wonder if their parents hadn't brought home the thing, do you think you would have still pursued the tech industry?
I don't think so, because I forgot to mention, I also had an Atari 400, and we had a basic cartridge for that. So I figured out I was super, super young how to randomize color slashing on the screen and print my name out over and over again. Nothing special. But because of that, when I got to college and I went to a big state school because I didn't really know what I wanted to major in. But I remember that I always had a lot of fun on computers because we always had them around. And I'm like, I'll take a computer science course.
Okay. So you grew up, and then what were your first steps into your professional career? Did you get an internship? Did you, where was that?
So this is kind of weird. It was my very first computer science class, and the TA one day came up to me and he's like, there's a program where one of our professors gets a few students to run the computer science lab. So we had a separate set of computers for all the computer science students, and this is back before everybody had their own computer. And students ran the entire lab under sort of the watchful eye of the professor. And he's like, you should talk to her. I think that you should do that. And so I was like, I don't know anything about that, but I guess I'll do it. So I went and talked to her, and for some reason she took me on board. I didn't have any experience really using Unix. I didn't know anything about system administration. I had a long way to go. But she took me on board, and I was working with a really great group of guys who are just a couple of years older than me who took me under their wing and taught me a bunch of stuff. I still run into some of them out in San Francisco now. But it was just through that. I got an internship because she was really well known. This is in Boulder, Colorado. Right. She was really well known in the Boulder tech community. So company was to contact her to be like, can I have a student for an internship this summer? And my first internship was with a company called Freshwater Software. And it was just five people who founded the company. And they're like, we need somebody to do something, but we don't know exactly what our biggest need is now.
Right.
So you're going to do basically everything, and we're going to see where we need the most help.
Wow.
So in the mornings, I would come in and do sales. In the afternoons, I'd do a little bit of system administration. And then before I went home, I would process credit cards.
And about how old were you?
I was 19 at the time.
Yeah, like crazy.
Yeah. So I was just sort of jack of all trades in the office. And then I did, the following summer, I did an internship at the research arm of the local phone company. And so I had my like super small company experience and then my super big company experience.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I am definitely a small company person. Like there is no question. So I went back to that first company. I actually ran into the CEO in the grocery store one day. She's like, you need to come back. And I'm like, okay. And at this point, I was a year away from finishing school. And she's like, no, you should come back now and just finish school. Like, we'll make it so that you can leave for class and stuff. So I actually was working full time at the company that I did the internship at for my like final year and a half of school.
What kind of mindset did you have at 19 years old to be like, because it's a known study that usually a guy has no problem taking a job, not knowing how to do a job. And a girl will say like, oh, I need to learn how to do the job first before I could accept doing the job. So you got thrown into a situation where you didn't know how to do any of it and you had to figure it out right away. So what kind of mindset did you have to empower you to take that on?
I guess I never really thought about that very much. It was just like, well, this is what I committed to, and this is the work, and I'm pretty sure that I can do the work. Like, I didn't want to fail. So either you, like, there is no choice there. Either you dig in and you succeed,
right,
or you get scared and you pull back and you fail.
Totally. And then what happened after that? So after you did that job, what was next?
So that job, that was interesting. That was
And what did you like most from that job?
That was a fantastic culture. The CEO was a black woman from Louisiana who was, she's just a fantastic human being. She is warm and caring and takes care of people. And the entire company and environment was very supportive. It was very much focused on human potential and growth and enjoying work and what we did every day in the service of the company rather than like digging in and making a company the best it could, you know, the biggest and most valuable it could possibly be. And it had the benefit of only taking $1 million in venture. So, and they had burned through it before they got successful. So they weren't beholden to anybody in terms of a return.
Right.
And it just allowed a lot of freedom to execute. So that company was acquired by a much larger Israeli company, and that's when the culture totally changed, and that's when I left. And I ended up moving out to San Francisco to work with some friends from college on another startup.
And what was that startup?
That startup, so this is 2003, so think like pre-cloud.
Right.
And we were trying to convince people doing very large commercial real estate deals that
yeah.
they should put all of this stuff in the cloud. And it was... like, it was a smart idea, and I think that there's still some potential there, but it was way, way, way too early.
And kind of jumping ahead for a second, because there's a few things that I'd love to talk about with you. One is how to be an effective leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also want to talk about, I mean, you gave a huge speech at the Dublin Tech Summit. I want to talk about what it takes to have the confidence to speak on stage to a huge audience and where you got started. I think that's something that would benefit a lot of people, because I think isn't like speaking one of the scariest things? It's like one speaking public speaking taxes, and you know.
Yeah, it's public speaking can be very nerve-wracking. Slack is like 800 employees now, and since I helped build the company and I've been there the entire time, like that particular audience of 800 people is not intimidating to me. I was like, this is, you're my people. We are all the same. Like, I'm just talking to an extremely large family. Going into a theater like that is a very, very different experience, but it's kind of the same thing as my first job, where it's like, well, I committed to this, and either I can be scared, and if I'm scared, it's going to be terrible, and I'm going to feel terrible, and everything's going to turn out poorly, or I can just dig in and go for it and hope and be myself and hope for the best.
Do you, what kind of preparation do you do before you give a talk? You give talks often, right?
Sometimes. Things come in like waves. So I don't like preparing for talks, and I'm a procrastinator, so there will be a part of the talk that I'm interested in writing, and I'll get sort of that outlined. So I write an outline. I never go straight into like PowerPoint and start building slides, because then you just get focused on like formatting and animations, and you don't actually build any meaningful content.
Right.
So I write out an outline, and I kind of juggle around the pieces a little bit, and try to break it up into sort of slide-like thoughts.
Right.
I know that I can speak roughly 30 seconds to a minute on each slide, and that's how I pace myself, is that I count like how much content, like how much mental content is on the slide, like how much do I need to speak to what is there, and then how many slides do I have, and how long am I supposed to talk? So that's really how I structure it. But there's always this like grotesque push right before the talk is due, where I'm just like grinding it out. Like, why did I do this? This is the worst. So yeah, I don't like the like full preparation for talks.
I really want to get into what it is to be a leader. But before that, let's start, like, how did you embark on your journey into Slack?
This is a weird story. So I left a startup in June of 2012. It was just, you know, one of the ones that was kind of careening off to the side. And I'm like, you know what? I have never taken a break. Like, I had literally never taken a break. And I was like, I should take 6 months off.
Right.
Like, that would be healthy. So I was trying to take 6 months off. But about 2.5 months in, I was playing this video game called Glitch, and noticed that they needed a director of QA, and that was the direction that my career had progressed in. So my first job, that company was writing system testing tools. So like right now it's Nagios. There's plenty of stuff doing it for free, but back in the day it was software you could sell. And then that sort of morphed into a career of writing automated testing tools, which morphed into a career of automated testing, and then into QA, and then managing QA. So I was like, I could do that. And then I ended up running into the guy who was hiring for that position at a party. And he brought me in, and I knew the CTO from just social circles. So I managed to take 2.5 months off, or actually three. So I started in October of 2012, and then November, the company realized that the game was not a viable business and shut it down. And there were 43 people at the time. We have 4 co-founders, and then they kept 4 of us employees to do the next thing. So we like turned the servers off in mid-December. We started building Slack in earnest in January of 2013, and then we like officially launched it February 2014.
I mean, it must be exhilarating to have watched it grow and do well. And
yeah, it's unbelievable, and I think we all recognize that this is the once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, this does not happen again. And sometimes it's exhausting and sometimes it's frustrating, but the sort of power and momentum all around us is, it kind of wipes all of that away. And it makes, like, I think we're all very grateful for everything that's happened. It's been a lot of hard work, but there are so many people who have worked equally as hard and not had the same success that we've had. So we recognize that there's a lot of luck involved here.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of you guys know that I run We Are LA Tech in Los Angeles, and we use Slack, and I use Slack.
Thank you.
There's like so many, I mean, so many things, so many people and ways to use Slack. It's crazy. In super layman's terms, for someone who doesn't know what Slack is, because I'm so in the world, can you explain what a beast it is today? Like if you're not in tech.
So Slack arose out of a recognition that sending email to your coworkers is not the most efficient way to get work done online. You have sign-ons and sign-offs, and everybody structures it into very careful paragraphs. And like, we basically still treat email as though we were writing a letter on paper and sealing it and putting it in an envelope and putting it in a mailbox, which if you just need to tell somebody a sentence, it's not very efficient. And the other problem with email is that the sender has to figure out everybody who needs that information and make sure that they get it. And if somebody is hired the next week who needs that information, they have no access to it. And if somebody on that recipient list is like, oh, actually, these five people also need this information, they forward it along. Like, it is a poor way to, it is an inefficient way to share information. It doesn't provide sufficient organizational transparency. Right. So with Slack, it's a real-time messaging platform. So people familiar with something like Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp will understand the messaging portion of it, which is just, you know, real-time, rapid-fire, sentences or a few sentences. And built on top of that, we have file sharing, because one thing that we do in businesses a lot is work on files together. And these can be spreadsheets, press document, like press releases. There are so many documents flying around our offices, and so much of working with documents is collaborating around them. So you can upload files and work on them together. And then the third piece, which is super important, is search. So imagine that you had basically Google for your company.
Right.
So the more you do things in Slack, the more you are creating a sort of a real-time canon of how your business was built, how your company operates, and what decisions you make. And then if everybody in the company can search over that archive of the company's history, suddenly decision-making becomes more aligned, just because everyone has access to the same information. People get insight into mistakes that were made in the past. You know, it can be like, why did you do that? Well, here's the reason. And they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Engineers can search for, you know, the last time this broke, how did we fix it? There are so many aspects of our working lives that are made easier and more friendly and more efficient when we all have access to the same information. So ultimately, Slack is an information transparency platform.
And how many people and how many companies use Slack today?
Company count, I don't have off the top of my head. We have about 5 million daily active users. And those are people who actually open Slack and read messages and send messages. We are on track this year to hit 200 million ARR. So in the software as a service world, ARR is a metric that a lot of us use, and it stands for annual recurring revenue. And the idea behind that is, if your company were never to gain another customer or lose another customer, how much money would you make over the course of the year based on your recurring revenue or the subscriptions you have, basically?
And you guys have raised a lot of money, too.
We have raised a lot of money. It is honestly not something that we needed. We're not, you know, strapped for cash, but right now, capital is extremely cheap. It's kind of like when everybody refinances their mortgages when the interest rates drop below 4. So when you have access to capital at a very cheap rate, and you can sort of put that in the bank for when winter comes,
right,
you have food stores waiting for your company. And so it's more of a protective moat, and it also gives us a lot of opportunities to experiment with things that most companies don't get to experiment with, like a national branding ad campaign that we ran last year.
How much money did you guys raise?
We are somewhere north of $500 million.
Oh, so just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little touch.
So now that you guys kind of have like a feel for those of you who didn't know how important and grand that Slack is, let's talk about being a leader. When do you think you first started learning how to become a leader?
That's a really good question. There are, so in, I would say high school was when I started sort of realizing that things were, like, that I was taking leadership positions and people were willing to put me in them. Like, I had peers who were willing to be like, yes, you can own this. In college, the same thing, but it wasn't, you know, I've had managerial positions for the last 10 years, basically, but it wasn't really until Slack where I was able to understand the strategy of the business, and I was able to, like, really embed myself in the culture and hire a team and understand the people and understand basically everything about what we are trying to do as a business, then I'm like, okay, I can lead this because I get it. And so much of this for me, it's like, I am utterly worthless. I am a waste of oxygen and salary without my team. Like, it is all about them. I live to support them in executing on their work as best as they possibly can. Otherwise, we don't need me. So for me, it's about, and as we get larger, my team is about 130 right now. For me, it's increasingly about making sure that all of those people can march in, you know, in lockstep. Right. They're all moving in the same direction in the same way. Because if everybody is sort of working together, it all goes so much more smoothly and we all have a much more enjoyable time at work. And ultimately, we spend too much time of our, like, we spend too much of our lives at work to not enjoy it. And I think that, like, some of my team will listen to this and I don't know what their opinions will be, but I think that to the extent that I'm an effective leader, it's because I can provide that guidance of, like, here is how you succeed in your job and I am here to help you do that.
100%. What's one really challenging thing about being a leader?
I think as our company grows, it becomes more and more isolating. There are fewer people who, you know, there are fewer people working in the area that you're working in. Like, the executive team is just naturally a small team. And that's part of it. And then the other part is there's really no one to roll up things to anymore. Right. You can't just be like, hey, can you fix this for me and have a manager, like, go to bat for you? Like, you're up. Yeah. Like, it's you. So learning how to work just at the level where, like, the buck truly does stop with me. It's up to me to make changes. Nobody else is going to do it for me. That's been an adaptation. I'm really fortunate. We have a good blend in the executive team of people who have grown up with Slack into their roles, and then people we've hired from the outside who have been through this a few times. And those who have been through it a few times have been good mentors to me in sort of learning how to navigate this new world without, a manager above me sort of helping me out.
And how do you overcome challenges?
We have, so our culture is one of constant feedback, which is really helpful because once everybody is used to getting feedback, both positive and negative, you can give negative feedback without it being personally insulting.
Right.
Which means that we don't have a lot of arguments. We have a lot of discussions with, you know, sometimes differing viewpoints, but they're never, like, heated personal battles. So I think a lot of that is just holding up my end of the bargain of, you know, providing input, providing, I guess, perspective, and trying to do my best to, you know, give information about, like, why I think something needs to change.
Right.
And then working with everybody to figure out what's the best thing for the company. And a really good thing about Slack is that we are only making one product. So we don't have the problems that larger companies have where you might have, like, two or three business units with some overlap in terms of, you know, SKU and potential customer base.
Right.
So we can all point in the same direction.
I love that. And if you guys want to check out Slack, I hope that you do. You just go to slack.com. The coolest thing about Slack, I use, as I mentioned before, I use Slack heavily, is it's on your desktop. It's on like a program on your desktop, or it's on the website, like mm-hmm. through the browser, or you have it on your mobile app, or like essentially you can access it everywhere. It's just really easy. And you can have multiple Slack teams. So like depending if you have a Slack at work and then you have a Slack for another reason, or you could just have multiple Slack, and they make it really easy so you could just switch from account to account.
Yep.
Yeah. You guys also, I mean, this is a podcast and you guys have a podcast.
We have a podcast.
How can people hear your podcast?
Our podcast is available. You can go to our website or it's available, you know, wherever you get your podcast subscriptions. It's on iTunes. And
what kind of content is your podcast?
It is stories about work. So it's not specifically about Slack. We like to understand how people are working and what they are working on and what challenges they face and how they overcome those challenges, because ultimately Slack is just part of a much larger story about people in the workplace and people being productive in various ways. So we like to uncover interesting stories about humans at work.
And how can people get to know more about you? Are you on Twitter, or how should people connect with you?
I am personally on Twitter at Allie Rail. I don't tweet a whole bunch, although if you go into my like tweets and replies, you'll see me and my coworkers, we talk a lot on Twitter for no apparent reason other than sometimes it's, I don't know, but there's a lot of badinage around on Twitter between us.
And you're so funny. So my last question is, how would you say that you've been able to achieve your dreams in the sense of like, what has your mind state been that has helped you get to where you are today?
I think it's interesting to talk about dreams because this has never really been my dream. I have been the sort of fortunate recipient of a series of events that have gotten me to where I am today. And so much of it is just looking at an opportunity and deciding that it's worth taking a risk on. And the risk is both, you know, trusting the people, offering the opportunity that there's some meat behind it. And part of it is, you know, pushing myself to do the best that I can once I take it. And it's probably worth me stating that that first startup I talked about was really successful. I went to 5 after that that have failed. Like none of them exist anymore. And now I'm at Slack. So even though I spent a long time at companies that never went anywhere, it was still building my career. I was still making connections. I was still learning new skills. So it's, you know, I've just taken advantage of the situations that I've had to grow myself personally, and those networks have been hugely important in terms of growing into the next thing and finding new opportunities.
Awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. Like, you're absolutely inspiring. And I really, to be an active user of your product and then to be able to sit here in Dublin is crazy. It's just nuts. And you have offices all over the world, right? How many offices do you guys have now?
We're up to 7 offices. So we have San Francisco, Vancouver, Toronto, Dublin, London, Melbourne, and New York.
Nuts.
Yeah.
And I'm off to London next.
Nice.
So just thank you so much. If you want to connect with the Women in Tech podcast further, remember you could tweet at me at Women in Tech Show. And if you want to check out the Women in Tech Facebook group, just go to womenintechvip.com and takes you straight to the Facebook group. I will see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.